What's going on, football fans? It's me, J.R. Clark, back again with another Pound for Pound ATL Live. I'm joined, as always, by my co-host, Jonathan Holder. And today, we're joined by a special guest, Joe Patrick from 92.9 The Game. Joe, what's going on, brother?
Hey, thanks for having me back on again today, guys. I don't know what we're going to discuss. I don't know.
You know, I was bored, you know, and I figured that we might as well talk about
offensive line grading, you know.
It's the slow season right now for the NFL, right?
Yeah, I mean, you know, we need to get into depth about, you know, like fullback play and offensive line 40 times from the combine.
Third of the game.
The most important part of the game, who's going to be the water boys?
That's right. Well, as y'all all know, I mean, we're here for, you know, the obvious reason. At noon today, the legal tampering period kicked off, which they might as well just change it to the start of the new league year, because that's what it has become. And we waited for like bated breath for, I don't know, a couple hours. Because it's probably about 2:45, something around in there, when the news like finally broke. No, the Falcons hadn't made any moves up to that point. And we all kind of figured what was going on. It was just like, okay, you know, is it going to pan out, or are we going to go a different direction? And obviously we're talking about the fact that the Falcons signed Kirk Cousins to a four-year $180 million? Am I missing
4-year 180?
Yeah.
Yeah. 4-year 180. Yeah. 4-year 180 with $100 million guaranteed. By the way, it's structured. It looks like you can, and we'll get into all that, but it looks like you can get out of it after maybe the second year if you really wanted to. He'll get most of his money in the first 2 years. So, but that should alleviate some of the folks' worries. But we might as well just go ahead and continue to get into it. Yeah. So, Kirk Cousins, Terry Fontenot got his guy. Joe, what does it look like? What does it sound like over there with the craziness going on at the station, sir?
Well, I mean, I think, you know, it's kind of weird because I think fans still have mixed opinions about this, just because people kind of have had their, you know, their favorites of the choices now for a while. It feels kind of similar to me today. It feels kind of similar to the day that we found out Raheem Morris was going to be the head coach, and you have people like, yeah, you know, like retread, you know, kind of honestly like similar kinds of things that people say about Kirk Cousins because he's just been around for a long time. People are familiar with the name, and maybe hasn't wowed you throughout the duration of his career. Hasn't like, you know, won, you know, he's been on this big spotlight or been in the big spotlight. But I feel like there are a lot of people excited about it, obviously, but I think by the time he meets with media, people start to see him in uniform, teammates start talking about him, you know, I think that there will be more of a consensus around him being the right quarterback to go with. But to go back to Terry Guy's guy, I do think that this was who the Falcons wanted all along. It's not really surprising to me because I've always assumed that this is kind of going to be the case ultimately. And I always just felt like Atlanta had the financial resources to make sure they got this done, where Minnesota could kind of only go to a certain point. And the writing's kind of been on the wall about this now for several weeks. So I'm glad they got it done. I am a Kirk Cousins believer. I think he's super impressive as a quarterback, even though he doesn't have the strongest arm. But I'm also excited that it's now done. So we can raging debate now every single day.
Well, we're still going to rage and have debates, but now it's just going to be whether it's worth it or not. Go ahead and get this going there. Willie Doc, we appreciate you greatly.
Thank you, Willie.
He says, slow golf clap. Cautiously excited. Now we can go into 5,000 directions at pick 8. Wouldn't be mad at getting a wide receiver, which is something we're going to touch with you on because you've already been kind of tweeting that stuff out there, Joe. Mm-hmm. Wide receiver 8 would still prefer an edge, though. Let me go ahead and get Fred in there as well. Fred, we appreciate you greatly. Here's the dichotomy, right? Here's the, you know, both sides of it. Says, don't like the move, but hope we win. But one of the worst contracts we've ever done. I don't agree there at all, Fred.
We'll talk about that later.
The structure of the contract. Jonathan, what was your first initial reaction when the news broke?
So my first reaction was, it's fine. It's done. I was happy about it. I think if we were looking at free agent quarterbacks, you could either, if you're truly in a win now mode, like, hey, we want to win, we want to get back to the playoffs, we want to win the division, we want to do that stuff. The one guy in free agency that would probably give you the absolute best shot to do that was going to be Kirk Cousins.
Right.
Fields, everybody, including Kirk Cousins, everybody has their pros and cons. The cons for him are the age, obviously, the injury. Okay, right. The Achilles, I'm not that worried about. He's not a guy that's been a twitchy guy. He's not a guy that's going to run all over you. He's never been that guy. He's not even necessarily a guy that's going to scramble around a whole bunch behind the line of scrimmage, though he can do that if he needs to. And he's got some good escapability just getting away from pressure. But that's really never been his game, nor has talked about earlier, Joe, he's never been a guy that's like been the big arm guy. Right. He's been a guy that has relied on accuracy, that has relied on anticipation, good touch on the football, and knowing where to go with the football and where to put the ball properly has been the hallmarks of his success his entire career. It's never been, let me just rear back and fit it into this super tight window because I can. I got this cannon of an arm. It's never been that. So, he's that guy that flourishes in this type of offense. If we're going to assume McVay-ish type of offense, that he's the kind of guy that can flourish in that type of offense very easily. Only thing that gave me a smidge was, when I first saw the contract pop up, I did kind of, because my first thought was, I think his last two, maybe even three contracts have all been like fully guaranteed.
Yep.
So when I saw the total number.
Yeah, he's played 9 years on guaranteed contracts.
Yeah. So when I saw the initial like 4 years, 180, I was like, oh my God, that's a lot of money. But then once I started getting the details about what it is and how this is actually structured out, it's a far, far, far better type of contract than I thought we were going to get, to be completely honest. So,
It's 180. His annual value, here's the deal that for the folks who thinks, this is the worst contract ever, his annual value is $45 million a year. That's only $5 million more than the Daniel Jones contract. And if you look at just the normal inflation of, contracts in the NFL from year to year, this wasn't far off of just a normal bump for a quarterback, and especially a quarterback that before he got hurt was playing like a top 10 quarterback.
Now some people are going to be like, but Daniel Jones wasn't worth the $40 million. Why are we giving him 45 when Daniel Jones wasn't even worth the 40? Doesn't matter.
You can't.
He got it.
Right.
Once he gets it, doesn't matter if he was worth it or not. Next guy that gets paid, he's gonna be like, I need to make more than that.
Yep.
Right. Daniel Jones's contract is just evidence of what the market rate was at that time when that deal was made. And the Pro Football Focus gave it a B in terms of value, which is
right.
It's not like a steal, but it's good. They're determining it to be good value for the Falcons. The way I kind of think about it is it's basically $45 million a year for 4 years, and the last 2 years are optional basically. And you would have to pay the $10 million to get out of it too. But which is kind of funny because I think there were reports that came out, gosh, a month ago, maybe more, saying that he was looking for $45 million guaranteed over 2 years. That was the original report, I think, that came out. And ultimately they added some years onto it that gives them some different flexibilities, but that's basically what he ended up getting. And I think from the Falcons, they're like, okay, we'll pay $45 million a year for 2 years. If you're still balling, we'll do it again for the third year.
Right.
And if you're still balling after that, I guess we'll still do it again for the fourth. We might as well just kind of keep that rolling, but I doubt that happens.
But it's the deals like shortly after the deal broke, I had a buddy of mine hit me up on text and was like, all right, he doesn't pay nearly as much attention as I do because, he has a life and all that jazz, whereas I apparently don't. He was like, all right, give me the lowdown on Cousins as far as like, is it a good deal or what have you? And I was like, look, either way, you were going to be paying a king's ransom in a sense if you wanted a quarterback this year. And that was whether you traded up to the big three or you went out and signed, Cousins. The only way you were going to get out of this with relatively cheap deal would be, trading for a Fields. Then you would have to make a decision next year, per se, whether you were going to, pay him a ton of money or not. And I don't know about y'all. Like I said, I kind of, alluded to earlier, I don't have much of a life. But as I have been watching the Rams offense, like you're lucky in the sense that you get to see it with a bunch of different people operating it, whether it's Jared Goff, whether it's Baker Mayfield, whether it's, Carson Wentz, John Warford, or Matthew Stafford. And the way that offense looks when Stafford is operating it, when a seasoned veteran is operating it, is light years above anything else. As far as even having Jared Goff, who has obviously looked better in Detroit as he has continued to grow. But I think that's part of the thought process is you have, a first-time OC who you feel really confident in, but he's never called plays before at this level. He's never had to design a game plan, a full-on game plan, and be responsible for the entire offense at this level. What do you feel better at giving him? Do you feel better giving him a green quarterback out of college? Or do you feel better giving him a seasoned veteran who is already well-versed in the language that he speaks? Because all these offenses are like learning a new language. Kirk comes in 2 years off, dealing with Kevin O'Connell, who, oh, by the way, came from McVay. So comes from the same type system. And there is something rattling on my desk. It's driving me crazy. Can't find it. Sorry. So if I look distracted, my apologies. But anyway, so he comes in speaking the same language, which is a huge boon. You should be able to get going. And somebody, I wanted to get to this one comment because I kind of agree. Tony Lambert says, desperate teams do desperate things. And in a way, he's kind of not wrong, depending on how you want to look at it, because this team is desperate to win. They haven't put a winning product on the field in what, going on 6 years now?
Since they moved in that stadium, basically.
Right. Yep. Right. So that's 2017. Right. So even longer than that. So they're desperate to put a winning product on the field. And this was one of the clear ways they saw to do so. Joe, you agree or disagree?
Yeah, no, totally. I mean, I think, yeah, they're definitely desperate. don't you Falcons, you being the Falcons fan, don't you feel desperate for the Falcons to be a winning team? I almost feel like there's some sort of, there's like a derangement that's crept in because I think Falcons fans have been beaten down with these poor seasons and underperformance for so long. It's almost like we don't deserve to try to win, to make big moves, to make ourselves relevant, that we're just kind of like, we deserve to kind of just be stuck in this, not even rebuild, just like this perpetual cycle of trying to build a team on the cheap until we finally find some player that helps us emerge from this and we, kind of rise like a phoenix from the ashes. But these guys, the players, the coaching staff, the front office staff, like they're all trying to win. They're all trying to, put their best foot forward, just like we all are, like in our jobs. Like none of us are like sat content with kind of just like, we're all trying to do our best. So I think that they are desperate. They made a big move to push it. And I think that the reason why they landed on Cousins in particular, and this kind of goes back to what you were saying, JR, about, you know, coming from that McVay system where Kirk Cousins was under Kevin O'Connell. Kirk Cousins, if you go back to his last full season in 2022, if you look at his numbers between his stats, between the number thrown between the numbers from 10 to 20 yards, that intermediate area, he had 71 attempts. Matthew Stafford last year in that same zone had 70 attempts. Justin Fields last year in a full season had 19 attempts, only 19 attempts between the numbers, 10 to 20 yards. He's clearly just not kind of suited for the kind of passing attack that Zach Robinson's going to want to implement with this team. And we heard them talking about this, you know, in press conferences, whether that was Raheem's introductory press conference or Zach's. So, I mean, I think that their priority was to find the quarterback that best suited what they wanted. And ultimately that quarterback was the highest price one, you know, the top quarterback on the market. So be it. Let's go out and get the guy. And that's what they did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, Arthur, you know, Arthur Blank, if you're a Falcons fan, you should at least be happy to know that for the most part, when there is a clear vision presented, there are no obstacles in the way from the ownership standpoint. And in that aspect, I think that should be something that Falcons fans should be happy about, right? Fred says, you got $2 in. He says, he expects Super Bowls, no more excuses. I mean, you can expect Super Bowls. Go ahead, Jonathan.
Well, I saw this a couple times where people were like, you know, does this move get us a ring? Does this move this? And all I can say is like, look, we haven't been to the playoffs. We haven't even sniffed the chance to potentially have things bounce our way and luck into a Super Bowl, whatever. We haven't even gotten to the dance in at least 6 or 7 years. Okay. I just want to get there and then let the chips fall however they're going to fall. Like, could we get lucky 1 year and just get super duper hot at the right time? Absolutely. Could we go in one and done next year? Absolutely. Both those scenarios are equally possible in my brain. Okay. But at the same time, like, at least we had a chance and we haven't had that in 6 years. And give me, even if it's one and done, give me that chance.
You haven't been a part of the conversation.
Yeah.
In, you know, since 2017, you haven't.
Yeah,
we
as a fan base and we as a franchise, maybe not the franchise, we as a fan base, I can't really talk for everybody, but in my view, we as a fan base should be like, we're not in a position to be like Super Bowl or bust, no excuses. Like, I don't feel that way. Now, if we go on and we, let's say we make the playoffs and maybe we win a game this year, maybe the same thing next year. And then the third year we get to the NFC Championship game, maybe lose there. Then I'm going to start thinking about, okay, boom, Super Bowl or bust. Once we're like right there, then yeah, I'll start thinking about that. But I'm not like, if we don't make it to the Super Bowl next year, it's a, it's a failure of a season. If we make it to the playoffs, win the division and make it to the playoffs, and I'll be ecstatic.
Right. I mean, at the end of the day, it's about like something I said years ago. And it's, you know, still holds true. At the end of the day, as a Falcon fan or as any football fan, what you have reasonable expectations for your team is that they should at least be in contention. You know, you should at least be, you know, in the conversation. If you're not in the conversation, you know, year in, year out, then to me, you're not a good, you know, good franchise. And for the past almost decade now, or closing in on a decade, we haven't been part of that conversation. And if this move at least puts us in the conversation of being in contention, whether it's today, you feel much better about contending with Tampa Bay and Baker Mayfield and New Orleans and Derek Carr than you did yesterday. Well, at least that's the way
And I would even go a step like further backwards in terms of just like at a more basic level, what you want as a fan is for your team is you want to be excited to watch your team play on Sunday.
Yep.
You want to be excited to watch your team play on Sunday. Now, you're usually excited to watch your team play on Sunday when they are in contention. So that does play into it. But like, you just want to be excited about the team. If you're excited about the team and you're enjoying watching them, then you don't feel mad. You don't feel like you're wasting your time. You don't feel like you're like hard done by as a fan. And whether you end up winning a Super Bowl or not, you know, the chips will fall where they may. Sometimes you can have the best team in the NFL. You don't actually win the Super Bowl. And, you know, that might be a controversial statement to even say, but like, you know, fandom comes down to, in my opinion, comes down to something that's even like a lot more fundamental than like just winning the championship or not, you know, which is, again, I think that's why some people legitimately wanted Justin Fields to be the quarterback, because they thought that that would bring a level of excitement to the team that would make him enjoyable to watch and make him exciting to watch. And I think, you know, people are right to have that opinion. But I think that, you know, just signing Kirk Cousins, I just think Kirk Cousins is a vastly better fit for what they're going to want to do. And the Falcons are going to get much better results because of
that. I think so.
Yeah. Sorry, go ahead.
No. I was going to say, this guy, KJ, says, and he's kind of echoing what we're talking about here. He says, I just want more than 7 wins in the NFC, you know, and more than 7 wins in the NFC South title. Like, yeah, you want to be in contention.
Let's put it this way. If we had had Kirk Cousins with the same exact team from last year, we probably win the division, probably winning. I'm going to say we probably win like 12 games.
Oh, yeah.
Easily could win 12, maybe even 13 games with the team from last year, especially with the Kirk Cousins that was playing before his injury last year. And I tweeted about this, like, if he had not gotten injured and had maintained that pace, he was going to be neck and neck, if not outright beating Lamar Jackson for MVP.
Yeah.
I mean, he was that damn good last year.
He threw 4 more touchdowns in the eight games that he played than the Falcons quarterbacks threw in the entire season. Heinicke and Ritter together threw 14 touchdowns last year. He had 18 by the time he got hurt.
That's one of the
Which led the NFL, by the way. Like he was on fire.
So Xavier says he just read an article states that his contract will have about $35 million cap hit. So we'll still have money to sign more players. There's moves that they could still make, because King was saying, you know, can we afford Hunter? Talking about Danielle Hunter. What's our cap look like with this move? The cap, the two like sites over the cap and Spotrac have yet to factor in Kirk Cousins' contract, because I guess it's not official yet, so they probably won't. But
I think it should be up there. Well, Baker, I saw Baker's was up there today, so maybe by tomorrow they would have it up. But yeah, I'm not sure.
Well, but he was re-signing with the team.
That's true.
He could actually sign on the dotted line.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. So if either way, like, you got moves that can still be made. Like, I fully expect here in the next 24 to 48 hours, I would imagine Tyler Heinicke gets cut. That saves you like $7 million right there. Mm-hmm. And then there's Mike Hughes that probably gets cut, I would think, just based on his play time last year. Now, unless Jerry Hughes really likes Mike Hughes, Jerry Gray, not Jerry Hughes. I was like, wait a minute, that's not right.
I was like, wait, what? I think he's still playing.
Yeah, unless Jerry Gray really likes Mike Hughes, or Jimmy Lake really likes Mike Hughes, based on his play last year, I don't see them bringing him back. That right there is another 10 plus million altogether. Him and then if you really wanted to get crazy, you could kick the can down the road on either Lindstrom or Jake Matthews. Maybe not Lindstrom, because they just signed him last year. You have to wait a little while. Anyway, you could do some restructuring.
You could do restructuring with like Grady. You could do some restructuring with a lot of guys if you really wanted to. And to be completely honest, we don't know. Like, this year, the salary cap jumped more than people thought it was.
Yeah.
And so, you know, with the, you know, things on the rise, ratings wise, popularity wise, all that jazz with the NFL, who knows what the salary cap is going to look like in another year or two. So you kick that can down the road. Yeah. Everybody talks about that's what's got the Saints in, like, you know, $80 million on, you know, above the cap, and all that jazz. But the difference is, if we're kicking it down there, we're kicking it down there, and it's like going into potentially much bigger pools. So, you know, that effect is not quite as bad a deal. So it all depends.
Yeah.
So speaking of, okay, so it sounds like our natural time transitioning into talking about some other free agents. Joe, what do you see as like the potential like position of need now? Because Terry's always stated, at least since he's been here, he tries to fill need through free agency and BPA mm-hmm. through the draft. Mm-hmm. So what would you think is your biggest like area of need still?
I think it's pretty clear. I mean, I think that, you know, edge rusher obviously is an obvious need, especially without Calais Campbell, who, you know, I think co-led the team in sacks last year. This Falcons team, by the way, while they definitely need an edge rusher because they're just missing the players right now that they had last year, they were actually not like a terrible pass rush unit like
no
previous Falcons teams have been. They were middle of the pack, just about. They had 42 sacks. That was more sacks than this team has had in like 10 years or something. So they were actually able to do that without this kind of, you know, prototype alpha edge rusher who collects 13 or whatever it is. But that's obviously still a need. The cornerback opposite AJ Terrell, that's going to be a need because AJ will be playing on a contract year this year on his fifth year option. I think it would make a lot of sense to kind of have security there at that position so that you're not kind of bent over a barrel having to re-sign him when it comes to that time. Safety is obviously another need. The Falcons kind of got by with DeMarco Helms. We'll see what they need there. But then on the offensive side, I think, you know, it's kind of funny to say, but I think everybody knows that there's, you know, wide receiver needs for this team. And it's just funny because they've invested so much with their top picks on the skill positions, but they really do need that other guy to go alongside Drake London. And there's a lot of really good options in this draft. So I think that that's the way they'll go with that. Overall, I think it'll be interesting to see which options they decide to address with their free agency money with that capital versus what they decide to use their draft capital on to address needs. Cause I think that kind of tells you about how they're trying to build this thing out long-term.
So you mentioned edge rusher, which I think most of us agree. So let's take a quick look at like who are the via Spotrac, who are some of the guys that are still available. Big names, some of the bigger names that we were looking for, like the younger guys. Jonathan Grenard is already off the list. He went to Minnesota. Bryce Huff went to Philadelphia. Za'Darius Smith resigns with Cleveland. Leonard Floyd, who we were hoping for here in Atlanta, like that was a name that we were kicking around because of his ties to Raheem Morris. He goes to San Francisco. So he goes back out west from the cold Buffalo out to the sunny West Coast. Marcus Davenport signs a one-year deal with Detroit. Dorrance Armstrong, who was a under-the-radar kind of guy who I thought maybe we could get for a decent price, he follows Dan Quinn up to Washington. Taquan Lewis re-signs with Indy. Epinesa re-signs with Buffalo. Zach Bond, who I hadn't even seen that come across, he goes to Philly. And defensive end, who I'm not even going to try to pronounce that last name, goes from Jacksonville to Houston. So that leaves us with Big Cat Leonard Williams, who's interesting, and Danielle Hunter, obviously. We would all like Danielle Hunter as far as being a productive edge rusher.
There's Ngakoue down there.
Yeah, Ngakoue. You're mercenary for hire, Ngakoue.
Yeah.
Let's see. Calais Campbell, obviously. I wouldn't be.
There's Jerry Hughes.
There's Jerry Hughes. From earlier. Now, you could. A'shaun Robinson's interesting because he played with Raheem out there in L.A.
Yeah.
Not about last year, but the year before last.
One name that does kind of stick out to me, Derek Barnett. I wouldn't mind seeing him.
Yeah, Derek either. Barnett. Bud Dupree. He had what, about six and a half sacks for us?
I think it was 6.5.
Do you, Joe? You get the sense like, do you know? Has there been any like rumblings about Dupree?
No, I haven't heard any. I don't get the sense that they're not that they don't like the player, but I just first of all, I will say just for me, it's harder to give you accurate insight because I just have not been around the staff. You know, we haven't been able to just kind of be around them to kind of know how they feel about players or even just kind of styles of players. So don't know, but I just don't get the sense that he's a priority for them. Oh, I'm thinking more. So here's the thing. Like I've seen some people like in their mock drafts, for example, go with a player like Jared Verse. The Falcons drafted him, Jared Verse, with their eighth pick. And to me, he is very much a player that they would have been interested in the previous regime with Ryan Nielsen, who was running a 4-3, who wanted these kind of their edge players to be a little bit more bigger, stouter, able to play the run and the pass. And now I'm just, and I don't know if this is right or not, but the way I'm envisioning it is they want their edges to be like more athletic, maybe like just like a little lighter because they're going to be either like pass rushing or kind of out in coverage. They're not going to be doing as much, you know, you trying to use those heavy hands at the line of scrimmage to try to shed blockers. So that's kind of the way I envision it. So that's like one of my, favorite guys is Josh Uche. Cause he's like, just like a athletic freak. I love the idea of that. Again, I'm terrible with cap stuff. I refer to people when it comes to like knowing what players are financially feasible. But I do think, to go back to a question someone had earlier, do think that this team will be able to make at least kind of one significant impact signing, like one of these edge rushers.
I think so.
So I'd be looking out for that.
Breaking news. Breaking news. The Panthers just traded Brian Burns to the Giants.
Ooh.
So he is out of our division.
What they get?
They got it. It says he got a second and a fifth round pick.
Oh, they didn't have to give up their first.
Man,
and they re-signed him.
That's the Justin Fields trade.
Yeah, right. That's a second and a fifth, and he gets a 5-year deal worth $150 million max.
Woo!
With $87.5 million guaranteed. Nice. So yeah, at least you know Caleb McGarry's over there doing jumping jacks now. Doesn't have to worry about blocking him.
Yeah, he does. Oh, my God.
Right. Now, talk about, like, interesting young guys like Cleland Farrell, originally from the Raiders, now from San Francisco. He could be cheap if you wanted to also, like, put a hurting on Carolina. You know, Gross Matos is out there. Mm-hmm. So. Yeah. But yeah, there's still some interesting names, and I think that they could get some stuff done as far as like signing another big splash type guy. And then you could start like, depending on how you work, like do the structure of the contract, you could bring in, mid-tier. I mean, they're going to have to, you got what, 22, 23 free agents, and most of them on the defensive side of the ball.
I do wonder if they might have a particular eye on Danielle Hunter. Obviously, he's like the, you know, one of the best known edge rushers on this in this free agent class. But this team was trying to trade for one last year when Montez Sweat went to the Bears. I mean, I think it was reported that the Falcons had basically made an offer and thought they had it in the bag until they got one upped by the Bears there. So and Danielle Hunter was another guy who was kind of openly on the trade market at that point. And I do wonder if, you know, I'm sure they, you know, scouted him in depth, and I wonder if that scouting either steered them more closely toward him in this free agency period, or maybe further away. Maybe there was something there that they didn't like, but he's also one I would keep an eye out for.
And also for folks to keep in mind, something I brought up before we got on air tonight was Jay Rogers, our defensive line coach, was the former coach out in the Chargers with Khalil Mack and Joey Bosa.
Mm, good call. Yep.
And like right now the Chargers are a Khalil Mack or a Joey Bosa over the cap currently. Like essentially, like what they, you know, what they're owed, you know, is, you know, just about what the Chargers are over the cap currently.
I definitely take Khalil Mack.
Oh yeah, I'd take Khalil Mack all day.
Bosa is so much of an injury scare.
Yeah,
I worry about that. But Mac Mac is still. Mac was. Did he end up leading the league in sacks last year? For a while, he was. He was leading the league in sacks.
I don't know if he led the league.
Insane
but
that he's still doing it. It's just.
Oh yeah,
guys never.
Well, and so if you want if you want to get him in a trade, you now have the Brian Burns trade as sort of a template, and he's a younger guy. Mm-hmm. So you got a second and a fifth for him. Yeah,
maybe you could do something like a third and a, you know, for
sixth
Khalil. Yeah, a third and a sixth.
They have an extra Khalil. Third.
Yeah. Exactly. With having an extra third, it would not surprise me one bit if we don't have that third by the time we get to the draft, because you're also thinking about, like, there's been heavily rumored to be in the market for L'Jarius Sneed wanting that star type, the star role that they have in that defense, that Jalen Ramsey type role. And so we've been linked to L'Jarius Sneed for a while. So it'd be interesting to see if they make that move for him.
Well, since you mentioned that, I want to get your guys' perspective on this, because I've just been thinking about it. L'Jarius Sneed, because he has been reported to be linked to Atlanta potentially. And if they were to pay him big money on a big contract, then you've got AJ coming up. He'll be coming to a free agency. Can you actually re-sign him if you already have a big cornerback on a big wage already?
Depends on like how you structure, right? If you really want to. What I'm always interested in, like, you take Ron Rivera, all right? He was, to me, one of the classic examples of, like, his philosophy is, I'm going to build the trenches, not worry so much about the secondary, right? Mm-hmm. And so I wonder if this group, with as many brain power that they have going on with, you know, Raheem Morris, Jimmy Lake, and Jerry Gray, they're all defensive back guys. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, that's where they have cut their teeth. They have made their money, bread and butter defensive back guys. So I wonder if they wouldn't mind sinking money into, like, because you got Jesse Bates already on a big contract, right? So if you trade for L'Jarius Sneed, that's another big contract, right? If you'd want to keep AJ, that's going to be a third big contract.
Right, right.
But I also wonder the shrewd side of me says, if you trade for L'Jarius Sneed, you're not going to bring back AJ, regardless of how he plays.
Right,
yeah,
right.
You're going to, you know, eighth overall pick, draft, you know, Teron Arnold or Kool-Aid McKenzie or the kid out of Toledo that ran, you know, crazy fast, Quinton Mitchell, I think is
Quinion
his name.
Mitchell.
Yeah, Quinion Mitchell. So, like, you're going to draft one of those guys at eight, let him play nickel for, you know, a year, and then move him outside when you don't resign AJ. Like, to me, that's like where my wheels turn. Willie sent us $5 a little bit ago, and I wanted to get back, circle back around to it. I did not mean to hide the daggum comment. Go back. Anyway, so I have to believe getting Cousins is tied to a plan for his heir apparent in 2 to 3 years. What do you think that plan might be? So in a way, you're kind of talking about playing with AJ. What you got, John?
I said this, actually, I was on Big Lowe's. I was watching his show earlier, and I mentioned this in the chat. I think signing Cousins means you had no path to the top three. All right. That means that you're probably not going to draft a quarterback at eight. If you don't draft your quarterback at eight, the only other way you're getting any of the bigger names is you're probably getting back into the late first, maybe early second to get Penix. Okay. But if you're going to draft Penix, he's probably going to be your starter day one because of the age factor, right? You're not going to pay a guy 3-4 years potentially and have him play for potentially 3-4 years if you're wanting to start a guy either today or within a year or two, right? So my guess is they like a guy later in the draft. So I think it's going to be, I think in probably about the third round, they're probably going to pick up Spencer Rattler, and then he's going to sit behind Kirk Cousins for probably at minimum 2 years, maybe even three. And then once his Cousins turn to either we, you know, trade him, release him. We probably can't trade him at 38, 39 or whatever. But if we release him at that point, then he kind of be, he is the heir apparent at that point. That would be my guess.
Yeah, and Willie, it's a great question because, yeah, I think that part of the Cousins deal is that it's not like a situation where like you're headed towards this cliff and then it's just kind of like all going to blow up after that. It does give you a way so that you can plan ahead to have the heir apparent kind of take over when he's done. And I think I've kind of backed off on this. Like my initial thought, like coming into this offseason, was that they should go for Kirk Cousins, who they end up getting, and then also draft a quarterback. I'm cooling on the drafting of a quarterback just because there are lots of needs for this team that you can really kind of, you know, if you're drafting a quarterback, that means you're not taking, you know, a corner or a wide receiver or an edge rusher like that you need on this team. So I'm kind of cooling off on that. And I also think like Desmond Ridder, he's got some NFL experience. He's only counts like he's like $1.5 million or $2 million, basically free to be your backup. And it gives this staff a chance to just go through a season with him, learning from Kirk Cousins, and see if he develops, see if that can become something. But if not, I do want them to draft a quarterback eventually, because you have Zach Robinson, who is like specialized in knowing what quarterback to pick, whose abilities are going to translate not just to the NFL level, but to his specific system. So I love that they have that in Zach, who's not just going to be, I think, an excellent play caller, but his specific ability to identify the right traits in a quarterback that are going to translate to the next level. And so I would say that if they do double dip and they do draft a quarterback, I think it was because they really like that guy, which, you know, would mean I support it.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I thought about it. The one thing that changed my mind, honestly, and you may like laugh at me because it's structured in a way that they can move on if they need be, but the fact that it was a 4-year contract. And I know you do that mainly for money reasons, but as you stated earlier, there's also an aspect of it that, hey, look, if he's playing good, then we just, you know, we keep rolling with it. I could see them doing the heir apparent thing maybe starting next year. You know, and possibly go, you know, 2-3 years, kind of like the Jordan Love, especially if they can get a real young guy. Like, to me, if they were going to go that route, it would have been, you know, they would have been happy with J.J. McCarthy, because to me, he's the guy that you would have grabbed at 8, right? So they would have been happy with J.J. McCarthy, and they could have signed somebody like a Jacoby Brissett. The fact that you went after Kirk Cousins and landed him, to me, tells me that you're trying to put a winning product on the field, like, sooner rather than later.
Mm-hmm.
So that's my thought there. Let's see. Did I have?
Yeah, but and just to underscore, like, again, it's so fun because it's a big quarterback contract. I feel like a lot of people think about, they just have their, you know, memories of the way that it kind of ended with Matt Ryan's career in Atlanta ended, and how that kind of sent the Falcons spiraling into this salary cap hell that took them a long time to get out of. And I think that that's why people are like, hey, like, why are we doing this with Cousins when, you know, we just got out of this? And I get, you know, we're trying to challenge, but I really don't think that this contract is going to do that, because the Falcons at that point had restructured Matt so many times and they had Julio's cap impact. They just like they basically manufactured it so that like everything, they basically ate it all at once. And I just don't see that situation kind of happening again.
In that cap situation, it was a perfect storm to do what not a lot of other teams have done up to that point. And you're actually watching Denver do it this year with the Russell Wilson mm-hmm. stuff. It's just like, okay, look, we know that these times are coming to an end, and let's just, you know, eat it and move on. It's the thing that
New Orleans refuses.
New Orleans refuses to do. they're just like, nope, not going to do it. I'm going to, 37-year-old dude, let's go ahead and, you know, restructure that contract, add another 2 years, and make sure we're paying you well into your 50s. So I don't, yeah, right. No, Nick, for the most part, no, we're still going to have a show tomorrow night. Well, I'm sure we'll still have other fun things to talk about, but we figured y'all would want to talk about
The, maybe we'll know about a wide receiver or edge rusher or somebody else, by, or maybe a safety.
Yeah. Very well could.
There's there's lots of safeties out there. So,
hey, OMT says this chat is on Medicare. Holy crap. I didn't think the chat was that bad, buddy. Okay. So, Joe, you were tweeting out earlier that, you know, this, like, this move now, what do you think is in play? We've talked about needs, position of needs. Now let's go like BPA, right? Because that's what Terry says he likes to do in the draft. What do you think they do in the draft?
Yeah, I think if you want to maximize your value, so I think Malik Nabers, from, and this is just me, everybody's gonna have their own evaluations of these players. Right. For me, Malik Nabers is one of those guys who, like, if he gets to you, even though you have a need at wide receiver, you might not want to use your first pick on it, but he's one of those players where it's like, you can't let him go. Like, you just can't let him get past you. That's how I feel about him. So if he's there, I would take him. If not, if there aren't any of these top wide receivers available to be selected at 8, it probably means the draft has gone a certain way. Probably means that a lot of those receivers, well, probably three of them with Odunze get selected, as well as at least 3 quarterbacks, probably 4, I think. And then, yeah, that would be every single pick before it could very well be 4 quarterbacks and 3 receivers. And then it's the Falcons. So at that point, if that happens, the top offensive tackle is on the board. The top everything is basically on the board outside of those 2 positions. And so I think that you would have a lot of teams that would want to trade up into your spot because they would also have that pick. And with the offensive tackle specifically, it's not an immediate need for the Falcons, although I think it is down the road and I wouldn't be opposed to them taking a tackle. But ultimately, I think that you could trade down, trade out of that slot and just pick up more picks, pick up more value. And ultimately, this team is going to have to draft well. Like any team that wants to compete for a championship is going to have to hit on draft picks. So that's kind of a non-negotiable thing. We don't know if they're going to be hits or not when they're taken, but just giving yourself the most amount of shots to take players, I think is smart for this team, especially when you've obviously just loaded a bunch of money into the quarterback position, which this team didn't have to do these last couple of years.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Like I think right now, you know, you Falcons fans are like, why not Dallas Turner at 8? Now, I would take Turner at 8. I would take Versa at 8. But the consensus, like Joe was just saying, is that those guys, they're not like the extreme dominant pass rushers that we've had in years past. They're great guys with high upside. I actually spent the weekend watching Dallas Turner and Jared Verse, and I've come out of it liking Verse, really, liking his power and his – but Turner has a ton of, like, versatility to his game. So I wouldn't be mad or upset with either one of those. And like you said, Joe, if Joe Alt is sitting there at 8 and somebody's like, I have got to have a franchise tackle. And there's more than just Joe Alt. There's a few other ones. There's some names that I have a tough time trying to pronounce. But there's a handful of guys, if they're sitting there at 8 and somebody like the Jets or somebody – you know, like trying to think, maybe like the Bengals or something like that, who, or Green Bay even.
Yeah.
Like they just let go of Bakhtiari.
Or maybe it is a quarterback that's there. Maybe JJ McCarthy's there and the Vikings need a quarterback.
I was about to say Minnesota's sitting there.
I think they're going to be probably going to be several teams that would be interested trade partners for various reasons. When Atlanta's pick ultimately does come, it's not one that I think they would be able to make ahead of time because the draft kind of needs to unfold before needs become apparent for other teams. But
yeah,
I don't. And when I say trade down, like I'm talking ideally trading to like 12, 13, 14, 15, like that kind of range, not a huge drop down, but just enough so that you can just acquire some more picks and you'll still have one of these guys, whether it's Dallas Turner, whether it's Jared Verse, whether it's Laitu Latu, any of these guys, I think would be probably suitable. At least that's the way I see him. And if the Falcons do take Dallas Turner at 8, it's probably because they feel really strongly about him.
Oh,
they do think that he is kind of heads and shoulders above everybody else. So again, a lot of these things are like, we only learn about how the Falcons see it after it happens. Right.
Yeah. I would be happy if we were able to go back, whether it's to the Vikings. Again, I think if McCarthy is there, that's probably our biggest. Although, like I said, Joe Alt is supposed to be super good. But either one of those guys, if they're still there at eight, I think that's your best chance to get out of that pick. And if the Vikings want to send us some extra picks on top of that, swapping out those picks and we can get a couple extra or at least one extra like day two pick or something like that. I wouldn't be hurt by that. And if we're able to pick up, whether it's a Jared Verse, a Dallas Turner or Latu, like any one of those three guys, I'd be okay with. Latu, I think, is probably like technically, from a technique perspective, is probably the best technical pass rusher of the three.
Yeah, you got. I think Latu and Verse like give you the most like pass rush savvy wise right now, but I know Latu's had some injury history. And he's a little older. Same thing with Verse. Mm-hmm. Verse is a little older. Dallas Turner is, younger and definitely like a freak of nature as far as traits goes.
We could always go Brock Bowers at eight.
Well, I want to say, to kind of get back to we were talking about cornerback earlier. I can't remember where I heard this, if I read it in a tweet somewhere or if somebody may have told me this to me, which I heard that the Falcons actually the kind of the player they wanted, maybe outside of like CJ Stroud or something, was actually Devon Witherspoon. They wanted to go corner there with that pick. And Devon Witherspoon ended up getting taken, I think, way earlier than a lot of people had.
Oh, yeah, slated. Way earlier.
Yeah, but if that's the case, they then go on to they draft Clark Phillips III, of course, in one of the later rounds. And his season was all right. He developed and he played some games toward the end, but I don't think anybody's like locking him in like, oh yeah, Clark Phillips is our starter this year, right. So that's what kind of leads me to believe that this team is still looking for that player. And again, I think that just cap wise it makes sense for them to fill that spot specifically through a draft. And especially if you've got these kinds of tutors like Jerry Gray and Raheem Morris, who can help these young players develop at a really early age.
I will say this. The one guy that I really, 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 really hope we figure out a way to get, either he drops to us or we maybe have to trade up for him, whatever. The one guy that I would like to see either late first or early second, day two guy, I kind of really want Braden.
Oh,
really want. Oh,
yeah.
Man.
I mean, especially if like depending on, like the rehab of Grady Jarrett.
Right. Right.
Because Braden Fisk is a penetrating three tech, which is going to be interesting. Like this, how much do you want a penetrating three tech in a, base 3-4? Like, if you go and look at, now I say all that with, you go and watch what Raheem has done the past 3 years, a lot of four-man rushes.
Yeah.
So it's not like it's out of the realm of possibility, Kobe Turner had like 7 or 8 sacks last year from the nose tackle position. So that's another thing that they haven't done yet. They haven't grabbed a nose.
Yep.
That we fully Greg Gaines.
I would expect that to be a pro player, by the way. Right. I just don't see them investing a significant draft pick in a nose tackle who might play.
There's not really a nose tackle like that.
Trevondae Sweat,
the Texas guy.
Guy. Yeah. And you'd probably have to spend a second round pick on him more than likely. But the two guys that I was eyeing, Greg Gaines, because of his familiarity, re-signed with the Bucks, and then Grover Stewart, who I was kind of hoping he stayed in Indianapolis. So it'd be interesting to see, who they grab. Now here is the hinder. I've floated this before that people like would end up getting mad at me, but Grady is a cap casualty in my opinion. They have to shed money for some because of Kirk's contract. I'll say this, and I hate to even throw it out there. Like, you cut Grady, and that's an instant $12 million. Like, as far as business-wise goes. Yeah. So but it ain't popular.
We have talked about it. We've also said, in my personal opinion, if you release, you don't trade for one. You could trade Grady Jarrett.
Okay. Oh, yeah.
Easily. So like if we trade him, cool. You know, depending on what we get back for him, I could actually be behind that. If we just straight release him, yeah, the $12 million is nice. The leadership, the respect, the just the overall kind of glue guy-ness of him. He's not just a glue guy that's like, he's a guy that's on the team. He's a glue guy, but he kind of doesn't really do a whole lot on the field. He's just a good glue guy in the locker room. He's that plus the production on the field.
Yeah.
So you get rid of him and it's just like, oh man,
yeah.
Is the $12 million really worth it?
I was about to say, at the end of the day, with a guy like Grady, who is Atlanta, you know, in a sense of being Jesse Tuggle's kid and, you know, being the underdog type, being a fifth round pick and all this other, you know, to develop into the star that he has developed into, like, it has to be more than just a money thing.
Yeah.
To move on from Grady.
And he's got a connection to Raheem, you know, as right. far as like the yep. new coaching staff connecting with the group of players, like it's important to have a player like him who can you know, be that conduit.
Chris says that $12 million would only cover the damage done yeah. to the bins yeah. when the fans riot. You ain't wrong about that, Chris. Yeah. You ain't wrong about that. But no, well, it's, like, you know, something like you've got to look at.
Another guy to look at, I mean, especially if you're going to maybe if you do entertain the possibility of moving on, however that happens, moving on from a Grady Jarrett. If that were the case, then at the 8 pick, maybe trade back to 11, he might still be there. Then maybe you're looking at a Byron Murphy to replace him. You know, and he's if in a 3-4, he's like your 3-4 defensive end. Then if you do come down into like a 4-3, he's your internal, you know, pass rush guy. You know, he's a little over 300 pounds, but he's still got the speed and quickness. So I, you know, but man, I'm telling you right now, Grady Jarrett not being on this team would be wild.
Oh yeah. No,
I can't imagine that happening, honestly.
Yeah. I can't see that happening. I would expect in the next, we're going to go ahead and start wrapping this thing up. But I would expect in the next day or two that you get a wide receiver and potentially an edge. It may not be big names at either, but I would imagine that you, because I don't think, you know, Terry is going to want to back himself into a corner, so to speak, when he goes into the draft. At least he hasn't done so yet in his three drafts prior. He seems to give himself as much flexibility as he can. But I'd be remiss to say, y'all ready to talk about Charlie Warner?
Yes.
I know that's what y'all are all waiting on was to talk about Charlie Warner, PFF's second best. What was that, Jonathan? What was it?
Second best run blocking tight end, second only to his teammate George Kittle.
That's right.
Interesting.
But I tweeted out, I was like, this is a guy, obviously you're bringing him in for run blocking, right? Or even right. pass blocking. But you're bringing him in mostly as a run blocker in the run game. But he's a guy that could be kind of the Levine Toilolo of our current roster, where literally the guy doesn't sniff the ball for like 3, 4, 5 games. And then some game, maybe – you know, it's a really like anticipated game, you know, high powered matchup or whatever, get to the late game and you start running all these guys out there. And then he somehow slips like through the whatever. And he's the guy that picks up like that really important first down that you need because nobody is looking at him because he hasn't touched the ball half the year. So right. like that's the guy that, and I love those guys. I love those guys that pop one every 3-4 games and because not necessarily because they ran a great route or that they beat their man, or they did anything like that. It's just, they're the unsung guy that nobody thinks about and they leak out somewhere and everybody's looking at Pitts and Bijan and Drake and whoever else we get. And this guy just kind of leaks out and you toss it to him and there's nobody around him. I love when that kind of stuff pops open like that.
Well, it's interesting to me, honestly, that that they decided to spend on this position. They spent money on a pro player for, you know, to be a blocker, basically, is what he's going to do. And I think it's no surprise that they go get a guy who's been running Shanahan's offense, which is what this is going to be. And as a player that will, you know, be able to do a lot of these things that is asked of these types of guys, which is a lot of times late shifts, you know, before the snap, things like that, that can be troublesome for a lot of players who aren't familiar with it.
I wonder if they end up using him kind of like the new hybrid fullback type situation.
Yeah. I think that's,
you know, like a Juszczyk or whatever, but I'm kind of with the bigs. When it first broke, I was like, Charlie, who?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know the guy.
And everybody, apparently he is a former Bulldog, so that should make some folks happy. But yeah, I thought that was kind of,
but you would think a position like this is kind of insignificant and that they would just use John Fitzpatrick or just draft a guy in the sixth or seventh round who can, you know, certainly that guy can block. Not that easy. And I think that it's interesting to me that they found it worthwhile enough to go out and spend, you know, $12 million over 3 years or whatever it is for this player.
And it could be like on the back of like, hey, last year we drafted Bijan Robinson at 8. Like we put draft capital into the running back position. Mm-hmm. I know that that wasn't y'all's choice, you know, looking at the head coaching, but he's here and we need to be able to maximize it. And maybe the way they wanted to maximize it is with somebody like that.
As Chris would say, he's likely Bijan's new best friend.
Right. And so I wonder if like what this means for a guy like a Keith Smith, who has stuck on the team for a while now. So it'll be interesting to see how that all plays out. Let's see, trying to see if there's any more. Yeah, Tony, sorry, buddy. Both those guys have already been signed. AJ went back to Buffalo, and
Gabe Davis went to Jacksonville. Jacksonville.
Yeah, he's the reason why we're not going to get a second round pick because they are not going to re-sign Calvin Ridley.
No.
So anyway, all right, folks. Well, I think that's going to do it for us today. We'll be back live again tomorrow to rehash any more things that are going on, popping up. Hopefully we have some fun stuff to talk about. Joe, we appreciate your time.
Thank you for having me on with us tonight. Yep.
Absolutely, man.
Do you want to tell folks where they can find you?
You can just follow me on Twitter at JAPatrick200. That's good enough.
How's the soccer stuff? I know y'all launched the website.
New soccer site's going well. Yeah, if you're a soccer fan, 5stripefinal.com. You can go sign up there. Season just started. Having a good time, you know. But yeah, all good.
Real quick, as an aside, because I haven't really been paying that much attention this year. Mm-hmm. How is United looking?
I mean, they lost their first game to the defending champions on the road, 1-0. They didn't play great, but it wasn't a terrible loss. And then they played their first home game this past Saturday, so they've only played two games. This first home game this past Saturday, they blew out the other team. They were winning 4-0 at one point. It was 4-1 final. Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
But they should be good. Nice. They should be challenging for a championship this year, I would think.
When the one guy got a hat trick. What was his?
Yeah. Yeah. Yorgos Giakoumakis had a hat trick.
Yeah. GG. Sure. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. GG. Yeah.
And he said GG.
Yeah, he did say that.
Cool. He did.
All right, folks. Well, like I said, we'll be back again tomorrow. Y'all can always follow me on Twitter. I'm at Grim1128, GRIMM1128. Jonathan.
At Jonathan M. Holder. Come by, say hi.
All right, folks. Peace up and rise up.
Rise up.